You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Boys, I'm mellow as a honeydew. Yeah, that cat is high. Look that look in his eye. Oh man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. It's a nice little day in Brooklyn here. Everyone's very happy. Roberta's, where we do the radio show from, just got 2 stars in the New York Times. Nice cue. Thanks, Jack. That, of course, is Jack Inslee, our producer. And in the studio today, we have the bar director of Frankie Spuntino in Brooklyn, and now with the second location opening in the West Village in New York City, Cabell Tomlinson. Welcome to the show, Cabell.
Thanks, Damon.
Lovely to have you here. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the whole world of Frankie's. I mean, some of us already know about this restaurant. It started back in 2004 in Brooklyn in Carroll Gardens, and then opened the East Village location, Lower East Side location a few years after that. Now we've got at 570 Hudson. The newest Frankie Spuntino opening.
It's the newest, it's interesting because it's going to be kind of an amalgamation of the Frankie's restaurants, the Spuntino's, and a little bit of Primeat's influence. It's still going to be the Frankie's food with a little bit of a twist, but, you know, it's kind of like an amalgamation of the two places.
It's going to be a little bit more like wider, like broader spectrum.
Wider, yeah. They're gonna, it's a broader spectrum. There's going to be some things in the menu that are not on the other menus, some different items. You know, they're kind of pushing the envelope a little bit. So.
Cool. Yeah. And in your role in all of this is running the bar and making some really, really great cocktails happen. So can you tell us a little bit about the influences and the general direction of where this bar is going to go?
Well, what I wanted to do with the bar program there was focus on aperitivo-style cocktails. Mm-hmm. The Italian way of drinking is really different from how people in the U.S. drink generally. I mean, they drink a lot of vermouth. Mm-hmm. They drink a lot of bitter liqueurs. Mm-hmm. They love Campari, Amaros. And sort of their ethos of drinking is different. It's, you know, the idea is that you drink something bitter and something that's low in alcohol sort of during the end of the day or before you're going to dinner. So you have that and it kind of encourages your appetite. And then you move on to like dinner and your food and wine. And then after your meal, you move on to something, again, that's going to help your digestion. Mm-hmm. So we're going to kind of encourage people to try those flavors.
It's a lot different than the way that Americans drink normally.
Yeah.
I always like the story in Toby Ciccone's book, Cosmopolitan, where he retells a story from his father's perspective of a bunch of American GIs in Italy at like 7 in the morning stumbling down the streets.
Wasted.
Just wasted, singing and like arm in arm, like just going crazy. And everyone being like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, no, because it's considered very bad form for an Italian man, you know, to be drunk. Like, you're never seen as being drunk.
Yeah, it's actually a sign of weakness.
It's a sign of weakness, yeah. I mean, you should be able to handle your alcohol, but not only that, but you should know how to drink so that it doesn't...
So you don't look like an asshole.
Yeah, pretty much, you know. And so I think that's some of the... Which is kind of funny, which I think we're going to talk about later. Some of the slang, you know, that has come into play over cocktails that were created with... sort of the aperitivo Italian spirits, is a little bit of like a thumb in the nose to Americans, sort of the way Americans were behaving during Prohibition and sort of during the wars and when they were there and drinking and the way that they were drinking. It's just a totally different idea. You know, it's they think that you should, you know, drink what's right and in the right amounts.
What's right and in the right amounts, which is, you know, why even like the glassware, like Grappa glassware and like Amari glassware, it's not huge.
No.
It's, you know, it's enough.
It's a modest amount.
Right, yeah. Right. So tell us a little bit more about, like, explain to us, like, a, like aperitif style. Like you know, we've got your Campari, you've got Aperol, even Swiss, like Grand Classico, you know, in that red bitters family. They always tend to be red. I mean, like, and also, like, as far as, like, as far as, like, vermouth go, as far as vermouth goes, you've got, like, again, like, low alcohol, but spiced, aromatized.
Yeah, I mean, it's like there's a long history of vermouth, and, you know, it actually was started with Hippocrates. And he created something that was called, it was like Hippocratic wine, and it was essentially a medicinal drink. And it was,
which is pretty common with most like classic alcohols.
Yeah,
they were always prescribed as medicine.
They were prescribed exactly, and it was something that you drank. I mean, this apparently this wine he would infuse this wine, aromatize it with Artemisia, which is wormwood, essentially absinthe, and dittany, which is another herb that was considered to be a magical cure-all. And he would prescribe this for people for everything from like arthritis to rheumatoid, you know, problems, period pains, like. Also, they would even, they were so sure that this was such a magic elixir, they would actually give it to people if they had been poisoned with mushrooms or something like that. So it was considered to be kind of a cure-all.
Wow. That's funny because, you know, especially with even like Fernet Branca, for instance, you know, they claimed originally that it also had like, it was like a cure-all for like many things, including menstrual cramps and things like that, you know, just like vermouth.
Yeah, so yeah,
and it's so funny that they come from the same place.
Yeah, it was quite a concern.
It was an issue. It was a huge issue.
Well, this is like before Advil, so you know you really needed something. So you know, Hippocrates was on it. You know, he was working something out.
And how long ago was that? I mean, like that was
400 BC.
Okay, cool. So from there, and now the term vermouth is actually
Well,
vermouth in German, that's
vermouth,
wormwood.
It is the word for wormwood, and obviously wormwood is an essential ingredient in vermouth. In order for something to be called vermouth, it has to have Artemisia or wormwood in it in some percentage.
And that's kind of crazy because, like, we don't think about that, you know, like, in most, well, most people wouldn't know that, but, like, you know, there's the whole issue with absinthe and, like, the wormwood content in it, and then it's like the most unassuming thing that would happen with vermouth. People think of vermouth as something they don't want in their martini.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, that's also, I think, because of sort of people's misknowledge about vermouth and how it needs to be treated and stored. I mean, because first of all, vermouth is an aromatized wine. So you have to treat it the same way that you treat an open bottle of wine.
But it's typically fortified to a certain
point. It's fortified, so it does have a shelf life. I mean, you can open it and leave it out for it's a certain
some
period
more
of
so
time.
Than others, I guess.
Some more so than others, depending on what exactly, you know, is their makeup. But really, it's recommended that you refrigerate it after opening. And then it has a shelf life. I mean, it has a shelf life after that.
Right.
It's, you know, between like 3 to 6 months. Of course, if you are working in an Italian bar, then
you don't have to
worry about that because you're going through it, you know, bottles and bottles and bottles. So,
and so, okay, yeah, exactly. And so, that being said, like drinking it on the rocks or drinking it with seltzer, even doing like I know you call it. Wait, which one of us is right? You're Milano Torino or Torino Milano?
Milano Torino.
I always call it Torino Milano.
No, it's Milano Torino.
I know, but I don't know.
The Americano cocktail. It was a cocktail that was popular in Italy around the time of during Prohibition, when Prohibition was going on in the U.S. And it was called in Italy, called the Milano Torino, the Milano for the Campari, which is from Milan. And then for the at the time it was made with Cinzano. I think the Cinzano may have actually come up with the drink. And so then it was Cinzano from Turin. So they called it the Milano Torino. But so many Americans would come. And there have been a couple different stories about this. One is that the Americans came during Prohibition and they drank it and loved it, but they asked for it with soda. Because they, you know, needed that extra, you know, bit of dilution. Mm-hmm. There is another that that Americano is also slang in Italian for bitter, and even though it's a bitter cocktail, it was also a little bit of a thumb of the nose to the Americans, you know, coming over and like, you know, they couldn't drink in the U.S., so they would come here and they would kind of drink a little too much, and That was kind of the thing that they steered people towards, because, you know, they knew they wouldn't get too drunk off of it and they could handle it. But it was sort of, for a lot of Americans, their first introduction to those kind of bitter flavors.
Yeah. So, okay. So that's actually the, like, the grandpappy of the Negroni.
Yeah.
You've got, like, the, I keep calling it Torino Milano. Sorry. Milano Torino.
We can just call it the Americano. Why don't we do this?
Well, then you add the seltzer, then it's an Americano.
Yeah.
And then eventually Count Negroni was like, I don't want seltzer in this.
Yeah,
I want gin in this. So
yeah,
that was the Negroni cocktail.
And that's like a whole other thing, because I know that, were you talking to Angus on the show? Were you talking about the history?
Oh, Angus Winchester from Tanqueray.
Yeah, but the history.
From Tanqueray,
from Tanqueray, totally. The history of the Negroni. And the Negroni is a quintessential, you know, Italian cocktail. You know, it's a classic, and classically it's 1-1-1, equal parts gin, Campari, and sweet vermouth. And then bartenders kind of take that, and it's actually kind of a good thing to start with too, because that's one of the sort of Italian style cocktails that became the first thing that piqued my interest in the Italian way of drinking, because it was one of the cocktails that I'd had it, and I love Campari, and I've always liked Campari, but I never really felt like I'd had that, like, I had good Negronis, but there was one time when I went to London, visited London, and Michael McElroy, who's one of the bartenders at Milk and Honey, happened to be in town.
He's been on the show as
well. Yeah, okay. he was in town at the time, and, you know, he had said to me, you know, Cabell, you know, let's go to Montgomery Place, and we're going to go and see Ago Peroni, who's works for Galliano. He's an amazing bartender, you know, who works in London. So we're going to go see Ago, and you're going to order the Negroni, and it's going to be the best Negroni of your life.
Okay, you told me this story before, but do it in,
okay, so
do it
what
in the accent.
The way that he actually said was, he's like, Cabell, we're going to go to Montgomery Place. We're going to go see Ago. You're going to order the Negroni. It's going to be the best Negroni of your life. And you know what? We went to Montgomery Place. Ago was there. He made us Negronis, and it was the best Negroni of my life. It was amazing.
What did he do? What did he do to make it the best Negroni in your life?
Well, first of all,
did you get to like watch? Did you get to?
Yeah, we watched him, and you know, I could kick myself because I cannot remember what gin he used. But he did equal parts, and there's also the other school of like 1.5 gin, 1-1. But he did equal parts. Mm-hmm. I think he used a Holland gin, and then in addition to Campari,
like a Geneva, or
no, it wasn't a Geneva. I can't even remember what it was, but it might have been. I mean, I want to say it might have been Gordon's, but I'm, you know, like sort of the one that they get over in the UK. But
the one that we don't get here, the one that's overproofed and awesome.
Yeah, green bottle.
That's in that situation, you would definitely, it would make more sense to do 1-1-1 rather than 1.5.
Yeah, absolutely. And but the vermouth that he used was the Carpano Classico. Right. Which is one of the Carpano vermouths that is not imported to the U.S. right now. And it's based on Antonio Benedetto Carpano's original formula. That's the one that he first made. And a lot of people say that, you know, they think that the Antica formula is sort of the original. And that is a recipe that he made for one version that he created. I mean, he created a number of, like, many, many different recipes. But that's the one that's sort of the gold standard that is used all over Europe for Negronis and definitely all over London.
Definitely all over the United States. Antica?
The Classico. The Classico. Anyway, so it was delicious. I mean, and I feel like I've been kind of chasing that dragon ever since, trying to recreate that particular. It was beautiful ice and beautiful. He had just such great craftsmanship with the garnish. I mean, it was this beautiful rosette that he made with the orange twist, and it was just perfect.
Nice. So, unfortunately, in the United States, for now, at least, that vermouth is not available.
Right.
The Classico. But the Antica is available, and that's actually become, like, the gold standard of, like, cocktail bars in the United States.
Yeah.
I've had the fantastic opportunity to actually taste the Classico. Yeah. You actually brought me a bottle one time.
From that particular trip, actually, I think I brought home.
And it was obviously, like, for, like, United States standards, like, it's in a 965-milliliter bottle, which is totally illegal. There are certain standard size bottles that you can bring in the United States, but it was the best vermouth I've ever had in my entire life. And
it's hard to not just, like, drink it straight. I mean, that's what we did, too.
That's totally what I did. The thing is, like, just going back to what we were talking about before, it's like that Italian way of drinking. It's like, you know, you put that on the rocks.
Yeah.
Orange twist.
That's all you need. I mean, it's delicious.
It's great in cocktails, but it's so funny to think about, like, the the way that customers perceive, the way that drinkers perceive vermouth in general.
Yeah.
And to think about like the way that like, you know, the way that martinis are made nowadays with like no vermouth in them.
Right.
And to think about the way that that is best enjoyed on the rocks, it's like such a crazy, crazy, like real long way to go, you know? But I think the way that, like what you're doing with this bar is really going to highlight and put a spotlight on these great products that,
and
this,
so
this style of drinking that is going to be really.
I want to try to change the perception of vermouth and those Italian spirits. You know, I think that sometimes people have had bad experiences because they've gone to bars and they've had, you know, a Manhattan or they've had a martini and it was made with essentially a rancid bottle of vermouth.
And it was shaken, probably.
And it was probably shaken, you know, let's face it, it was shaken.
Yeah.
With bad eyes.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is that, you know, I mean, once it's bad, it's bad. And so it's like to have that experience be your entire experience with vermouth is so sad, you know, it's because it's such an amazing thing, you know, it's such a perfect product.
Absolutely.
And it's so delicious, and it's, I mean, it's crafted, it's so much goes into it, and it's really a shame when people think, oh, this is that gross stuff that I want as little of as possible in my drink.
In a way, I mean, you have to treat it like a bottled cocktail,
you know, yeah,
that has a shelf life.
It does. I mean, it does have a shelf life, and it's like it should be treated properly, and it should be drank in the right way. So so we're going to try, you know, we're going to try to get people to taste those things in a different way. Give it another chance.
Excellent. I will definitely try those things. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, let's talk a little bit more about like what you're going to do at this bar.
All right.
All right. We'll be right back with Cavill Tomlinson from Frankie Spoon Team.
You've had it. It's good, isn't it? It does the job.
Drink up with me and my partners, make your breath smell good. I don't need no binocular, just small time drinkers, ain't knowing the beer. Get with this, it's like it's sipping on a licorice stick. For the players, it tastes a little bit like Jaeger, but smoother. Tell me if you're feeling the flavor. Take a shot, it's instantly making you hot. Next episode, add a breezy shaking the spot. You could chase it with some ginger ale. Now you're feeling me a unique liquor, only made in Italy. The perfect drink that'll mellow my mood, just like we go best right after some food. I might get a little rude, holla everyone that walk past. Well, DJ Paws keep filling up my shot glass. It ain't wine, it ain't beer. It ain't no kind of cognac, it ain't no kind of clear. Burn that bronca.
I drank for that, and I wanna drink more. I drank for that, things will never be the same. I drank for that, and now I'm all in her ear. I drank for that,
Oh, that song is amazing.
Awesome.
We're back. You're listening to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. We've got Cavill Tomlinson from Frankie Spuntino in New York City in the studio. We were just talking a lot about vermouth and a little bit of
Fernet. Well, see, that's appropriate, though, because the Branca family bought the Carpano company. So they, you know, they own it now. So it's, you know, it's all in the family.
Makes
or
sense.
All in La Familia.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I wish I could ask you more stories where you could, like, use different accents. Yours were good at that. So, okay, like, tell us what is going to be happening at Frankie's as far as the bar goes. We've been talking a lot about, like, the Italian way of drinking.
Yeah.
Aperitif, digestif, you know, light cocktails. Tell us a little bit about like what you're planning for.
What I'm planning is I want to do a series of aperitivi style cocktails, and those are going to include the majority ingredient in these cocktails. Instead of being a spirit, is going to be vermouth.
Cool.
So vermouth is going to be the main ingredient, and then it's going to be accented by other spirits, more like liqueurs and Italian bitter liqueurs. So like, for example, I have one drink that's made with a dry Cinzano extra dry vermouth and Saint Germain. It's a basil infused dry vermouth and Saint Germain and Prosecco. We're going to have Prosecco on draft at 570. And so we're going to be using that in the cocktails. And
nice.
It's really fun. It's delicious, too. So so we're going to have that. We're going to do a version of the Americano. It's going to be the Americano Royale. So it's kind of a combination of the Americano or Milano Torino, sweet vermouth and Campari mixed with a Cure Royale. So it's also going to have Cassis in the Prosecco.
Cool.
And we're also doing, we're going to use a lot of Campari and Aperol, which is sort of Campari's sweeter, less bitter little brother or little sister. You know,
any plans to use any of the, because I know that Frankie Spuntino, they have their own olive oil.
Right.
They have their own Sicilian honey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any plans to use any of that kind of stuff and maybe coming up?
Well, this is a little bit off the subject, but we are planning on using the marinara.
Oh yeah,
for the Bloody Mary.
Oh, cool!
It's going to be the Bloody Marinara. So nice. We're going to use the marinara sauce with the Bloody Mary. So that's good. Well, I mean, but the whole focus of the I want the program there to be very seasonal as much as possible. So using the vermouths, they're very versatile. So you can infuse them with the different things. Like the dry vermouth, I'm going to infuse that with basil, and that's very summer. We're also going to do things like once we move a little further into fall, we'll be using more flavors like pear and apple and cinnamon. And some of the vermouths are more like, Cinzano is more cinnamon heavy than Martini and Rossi Rosso, for example. So we'll be highlighting that. And then we'll use more savory herbs instead of basil, maybe like rosemary or lemon thyme or those flavors. So, I mean, and the thing about the vermouths is that they're already infused with all of these amazing, you know, botanicals and herbs. And so then you can just choose a particular one and highlight it. Like sage is one. Sage actually has a huge, sage is one of these ingredients. It's kind of funny because it has a lot of thorjune in it.
Yeah.
More than vermouth does.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know,
more than absinthe.
Yeah, it
more
does.
Actually more than wormwood, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Say. More than artemisia. It's got much more, you know? Yeah. And so that's another, and everybody cooks with sage, you know, I mean, sage is a wonderful flavor. So we're going to use that too. And so all of those sort of ingredients that are part of the botanicals for vermouth, we're going to use as seasonal highlights to those particular, aperitif style cocktails that will, you know, and they'll be offered by large format as well. So, people, you know, it's like
they can share.
You know, it's like it'll be like sharing, and that whole sort of family style of getting a number of things.
Well, that just makes so much sense.
It's just a share. You know, it's like everybody is sort of trying the same thing and having the same experience with it, and it's. You know, and then if there's still room at that point, those flavors and the wormwood, it enhances your appetite. So after that, you're ready to order some wine and go on to the rest of your meal. And, you know, then afterwards, we have a lot of digestivi, focusing on a lot of amaros. Amaro in Italian means bitter. And those are a little heavier style. Those are our spirits as opposed to aromatized wines. There are some, you know, that are you know, based in wine, but... So hopefully people will be drinking those afterwards, and that's sort of the whole thing. Is like, let's drink Italian spirits. Let's drink vermouth.
Well, let's do it right now.
Yeah, let's do it right this minute.
And then while you're pouring these drinks out, I want to talk about two cocktails.
Okay.
And just off the top of my head now. First of all, classically, I know this is a very brunchy thing to talk about, but. What is your answer to the Bellini cocktail?
Oh, the Bellini. Well, here's what I wanted to do with the Bellini over there. Personally, I mean, it's a very famous Italian cocktail, and it was kind of the elephant in the room for me for a while. I thought, oh God, what am I going to do about the Bellini? Because I don't like the Bellini, personally. I've always sort of don't like the way that it's presented. I feel like with the puree... It's messy. It looks gross.
Filmy in the glass.
And so
that's not to say that it doesn't taste great.
No, it tastes great, but I just aesthetically I don't like the way that it looks. So it was brought to my attention that there is there's an Italian drink called Scrapino, which is usually a lemon sorbet that's drizzled with a lemon vodka or sometimes limoncello and then topped with Prosecco. And so as soon as I realized that, I was like, okay, great. Then let's just make let's make it a Scrapino. So what we're going to do is, and it's going to be seasonal. So in the summer, when peach sorbet is happening and is available, we'll make it. It will be an actual, you know, peach, white peach sorbet with a peach liqueur and Prosecco. So cool. Scarpino style. And then in the fall, we'll do different things. Like we'll do a pear or an apple sorbet, maybe with like a cinnamon or something like Becherovka, which is, you know, ginger and cinnamon heavy Prosecco. So it'll be delicious. It'll be fun. It'll change. And so, and that's part of like the Italian ethos too, is that you eat what's in season. So, you know, the cocktails are going to reflect that as well.
That should be a worldwide ethos.
it should. I mean, it's ridiculous to get things. I mean, you really only appreciate things when they're at their full flavor, when they're at the time that they're actually grown and actually coming into, you know, season. So everything that has the possibility of having those ingredients is going to be reflected with this season.
Nice.
So.
Yeah, and so I we're talking about the puree. Like, I have this mental block normally about, like, if it has a puree in it, then I just don't want to drink it.
Yeah.
but okay, so, but I like the idea. Like, for some reason, I'm totally, like, on board with the idea of a sorbet and a drink.
Yeah,
Even though they're, like, they're almost in the same family.
It's in the same family, but what happens is the sorbet, it's, you know, when you put it out like that.
It's also more fun to say sorbet.
It's more fun to say sorbet. You know, but the way it looks is really interesting, and then the sorbet kind of melts, and so you get these different textures in the glass.
Yeah.
And you never end up with that sort of filmy residue, and it's more fun. It's just fun because the bubbles sort of break apart the sorbet, and so it's like the cocktail sort of evolves as you're drinking it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's almost like a grown-up dessert.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah, we were talking about also maybe doing affogato. You know, for a dessert, which is essentially just, you know, it's espresso, and then you have some kind of gelato, and then a shot of Amaro. So, you know, it's as much as we can do.
I like all three of those things.
Yeah, I mean, you put them together, it's just heavenly.
Yeah, nice. So, well, I am going to ask you about three cocktails. That was one. Number two, we're having the Negroni Royale.
This is Americano Royale.
Americano Royale.
No gin in here.
Okay, cool.
So that means it's Cinzano. It's Cinzano sweet vermouth.
And we're going to pour one for Jack.
We're going to pour one for Jack, too. Yeah, I just want to make sure I get some ice cubes in here. So it's a Cinzano with Campari and Cassis and Prosecco. So it's like a marriage of the Americano and the Cure Royale.
Cool.
Yeah.
While we're trying these out, let's talk about... I also feel like this is like a really great way to end the show today. It's delicious. What are you gonna do for the Tony Durazzo cocktail?
The Durazzo. That's like, oh,
you need to explain this.
Yeah,
maybe
the Durazzo.
Bit.
Yeah. Well, Tony Durazzo. He's in addition to being a good friend of the Franks. And a mentor, and also the architect and the woodworker for all of their places. I mean, he's created...
And he's the inventor of the meatballs.
He's the inventor of the meatballs and a number of the other recipes as well.
Yeah.
And just an amazing guy. You know, we wanted to pay tribute to him. And you and I had actually talked about this. Like, we have to figure out what the Durazzo is. And the unfortunate thing is that, well, for us, is that Tony doesn't really drink alcohol very much. So... Can I say what he was saying his drink was going to be?
What? You can say whatever you want. It's internet radio.
So here's the thing.
We don't give a fuck.
So what Tony was really... When I said that to Tony, I was like, Tony, we're going to make a drink for you. And he's like, yeah, what's that going to be? Coke and a joint? And we were like, yeah, that would really be the best.
Actually, that's kind of perfect.
That's kind of perfect. But, you know, it's like, so you wanted a Coke and a joint, but we couldn't figure out how we were going to make that happen. So we were talking about...
Really? You couldn't figure...
Yeah, couldn't really figure that out. But so we were thinking of the only cocktail that Tony ever drank, really, at Primeats, was the Martinez. You had the Martinez on the menu.
Yep.
And
speaking of vermouth,
I mean, it's, you know, classically made. It's two parts vermouth, one gin, then maraschino liqueur, you know, some kind of bitters, like usually Angostura, lemon twist. And that is the only cocktail that I've ever seen Tony drink. And you brought that up again, too. You had said, you know, this is America. We should really do a variation on the Martinez. So I asked Tony, I was like, well, I know you don't really drink that much, but is there any spirit that you like? And he told me, he's like, well, that he and his mom used to make Strega. And I was
like,
they made it. And I was like, that's perfect. So the Durazzo is essentially a Martinez with Strega instead of maraschino. And
awesome.
It's delicious, and we tried it out, and you know, he tried it out, and he said it was good, you know.
Awesome.
He liked it.
Well, so. I can't wait to try it either. And when will I be able to when will I and the rest of our listeners be able to come by and try this out?
Well, September?
September? Looking like the top of September.
It's looking like sometime in the beginning of September. That's what the word is.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to come by and try all of these drinks and obviously hang out with you because you're one of the greatest bartenders I know, and it'll be great. Sure. Can't wait to have the food, atmosphere, hang out with Tony, drink some Durazzo cocktails. early September, that's at 570 Hudson Street in the West Village,
yep.
The new Frankie Spuntino.
Frankie's 570 Spuntino.
Frankie's 570. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Cabell.
Oh, thanks, Damon.
You're always a lovely person to talk to, and I'm glad to finally have you on the show.
Oh, thanks.
All right. We'll see you next week. This has been The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. We got our producer, Jack Inslee, who's about to enjoy one of these great cocktails. And we'll see you next week. Cheers.
That cat is high. Look at that look in his eye. Man, I wouldn't lie. The cat's higher than a kite. Now when you see him stumbling up and down the street.
The following is a message from NOFA NY. Do you dig local food? Love organic farmers? Do you crave to be part of a growing movement of consumers concerned with the state of our nation's food system? Then sign up today to take the NOFA NY's Locavore Challenge this September. Join 5,000 other New York locavores that are hungry, active, and ready to change our food system. Learn more at www.nylocavorechallenge.com.
Every spring at the end of kidding season, goat dairies across the country are faced with the question of what to do with their male bucklings. Because on a dairy farm, there's no role for a male. Often the most economical thing for these farmers to do is to cull the animals at birth or ship them off to the commodity market. Heritage Foods USA is embarking on a new project, No Goat Left Behind, looking to step in and fill this niche by creating a marketplace for these male bucklings. Visit us at www.heritagefoodsusa.com to learn more and to reserve your goat this coming October.